Thank you.
I'd like to welcome you all here to Currituits today. I'd like to start by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land, the Gadigal people, and thank elders past and present for allowing us to be here. Currituits is extremely honoured to have with us one of the most innovative, creative artists of her generation, Björk. Björk is here in Sydney to launch her new project, Björk Digital, at Currituits for Vivid Sydney. To mark the world premiere of this extraordinary exhibition, she is generously curating two nights of music for Australian audiences. We would also like to warmly welcome Björk's incredible team, Derek Burkett, James Merry, Andrew Mellicore, Marco Perry, and Paul Clay, executive producer of Manchester International Festival. Please feel very welcome. Björk Digital is the centrepiece of our Vivid Sydney program, and I'd like to thank and acknowledge Sandra Chipchase, Anna McInerney, Libby Ellis, Stephen Ferris, and all of our collaborators at Destination New South Wales. We very much appreciate your continued support and collaboration. I'd like to also acknowledge and thank Brad Murray from WAB for his ongoing support and partnership. Björk Digital will feature the latest Intel technology, bringing Björk's artistic vision to life at Currituits, and we'd like to thank Intel for their generous support of this groundbreaking project. Björk, we are thrilled to have you here, and I'm hoping that you might like to start by telling us how the original idea for Björk Digital started, how it was conceived, and its journey to here.
Yes, thank you. It was actually a gradual development. I think because of the nature of Polina Kura, music kind of came first, and it was kind of had that sense of urgency about it, which and it actually both it came out. I wanted to put it out really quickly, and then also. It leaked the album, so it sort of had this kind of double thing, which I thought it was just like a natural, it was like a landslide or something, how it came out in January over a year ago. And we have then started to develop several visual things, and we just, you know, decided just to surf that wave and just let it be what it is. And then very like the opposite of Biophilia, where I went to rented a house on a beach on an island, and we took 2 years just programming the album and then both the visuals and the music at the same time. And this was almost the opposite, where the music just kind of was this element of nature that just happened. And then as VR was kind of all developing all around me, it became slowly apparent that this was something that would be a very natural home for this album. And what I the more often I tried it on and was kind of getting to know its character, because that's what I like about formats. You know, you have all the formats that you know, theatre, the old ones like theatre or the symphony orchestra. It's like a very like a specific format. And then you have like the rock concert or whatever, and then you have the iPad, which is a certain stage, you know, if you want. And while I was getting to know this particular stage, just the character of it, I was fascinated by how it both captures intimacy so well. You can be even more intimate than you are in a video, you know, or at a live concert. And I don't think it's a coincidence, it's just so penetrative that the porn industry has embraced it the way it has. It's full penetration. And I just thought as a musician, that's a really exciting toy to have, you know, to be able to be that intimate with someone. And then the other thing that's kind of obvious is the 360 element, which is maybe more known, and which is more maybe Wagnerian or like, you know, like an opera, you know, which I feel I've only just touched upon. You know, you can be in a space and be inside a, an insect and then suddenly 100 elephants run over you, you know, it can be very extreme. Like the scale, you can really play with the scale in the most theatrical way, more theatrical than film, I think, potential. So yeah, basically, it's a really long answer, but I think it just became apparent one video after the other as we got it made with the directors, that everyone had a natural home in this world. We weren't forcing it. It just was very gradual. And also there are so many different, just 360, that's different to virtual reality. There are all the different, like the cardboard one, the Oculus one. They all have different characters. And they all, actually all the videos so far were filmed with different technology. And it's this environment which I find very exciting, this pioneer universe where people are still discovering things, the bumping the walls, making mistakes, and having to discover new things they never had before. So yeah, that's sort of the story, and here we are. And I'm committed now to make a whole VR album for Vulnipura, which I think actually serves this album really well, because it's the only album I've done which is chronological. It has like a spine, like a story.
Incredible, thank you. We're sitting in the Black Lake Room. This extraordinary work was filmed in a volcanic rock in Iceland. Could you tell us a little bit about your connection to the place where this work was made?
Yeah, it's really close to where I live. It's only half an hour drive. I think this whole album, I mean, sometimes the music is very kind of easy for me to figure out what I want to do. Not that I can do it, but then the visuals for me always comes later. And it was slowly apparent that this album was kind of all about going back home and healing. So it sort of had to have lava and Icelandic nature in it. But the sort of barren one that you to kind of exaggerate the emotional state of heartbreak. So, which Iceland is very good at. So that's kind of why we ended up using Iceland almost as a character in most of the movies.
Incredible character that it is. Biophilia, another work in Bjork Digital, is an immersive multimedia experience. And what is extraordinary about it is it brings together creativity, science, education, and music in such an incredible way. It has also been included in the curriculum in Scandinavian schools. Could you tell us a little bit about the program and why it is so close to your heart?
Yeah, I think when I was touring with Volta, in last time I came here actually, 2006 to 2008, we were working with touchscreens called Lemir, and I was so excited. We were just using it to play live, but I was like, now I can write music on this. And I felt, wow, this finally opportunity for me to map out musicology, kind of how I wanted to do it as a kid in school. Because I just felt learning musicology from a 2D book was just offense to sound. and now what we have discovered that for schools, it's actually really incredible that the iPad or the touchscreen, great at pedagogy, you know, and especially things that are meant to be 3D, like physics and science and math and stuff like this. And music is the same. So I started mapping out each element in musicology, you know, like rhythm, counterpoint, chords, and so on, to whatever natural element was most similar to it, in order for kids to get it quickly. Like, for example, arpeggios are the same shape as lightnings. So if a kid sees a lightning and hears an arpeggio at the same time, they get it, you know, instead of reading about it for 10 hours. Mm-hmm. And so that was the whole idea. So, and then when it was was premiered in Iceland, I got Reykjavik city involved, and we did this. The whole project was always totally philanthropical. And I said, okay, I will offer the project if you offer schools to take part. And the University of Reykjavik offered science teachers, and the city of Reykjavik offered music teachers. And then we started doing those classes. And then they put it on 3-year curriculum of Reykjavik for middle school, which was very exciting, which came after that. And then after that, we won this huge fund for Scandinavia, everybody philanthropic, where it is now, I think, about finishing 2 years in schools in all the Scandinavian countries. And the country that's embraced it most, I think, is Finland. I think it's probably going to go into most schools in Finland.
That's extraordinary.
And what we are trying to do is just, I've sort of thought about that this was a project that I would give when I came to people when it came out, and then it would sort of grow. And we have been collecting all the info through all these teachers, and I've been quite a lot involved. And we've gathered together enough information and experience that we could make something called Biophilia 2. It'll probably be called something else, but just that, so it can become a tool more accessible to everyone. Also, what was quite exciting for me is that we managed to get it translated to Android. So, because the original idea was always that you just have a tiny smartphone, and especially in underprivileged countries or schools where there are no money for
technology.
For music teaching. And actually what we found is the people that were even more happy about this than music teachers were actually the science teachers, because they had suddenly access to teach about, you know, like all these concepts like Big Bang, and it kind of taps into certain things without any accessories. So it's been very rewarding. Actually, when I come home now in the summer and the autumn, I will get this project being in Scandinavia for 2 years, we will get all the results and we will make decisions what to do next with it.
It's incredible. Congratulations on that one. You are very generously curating a musical journey for Australian audiences for us over the next 2 nights. Can you tell us a little bit about the type of experience we can expect? Or it might be a surprise. You might want to
give me the teaching?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I was just kind of excited. It's been slowly developing. I was just always DJed just for friends. And then it sort of slowly become this part of me that maybe taps into, you know, when I was a kid, I always wanted to have my own radio show, so I'm kind of like frustrated radio show host, where I wanted to tell people about some music, like, oh my god, this is a really rare 7-inch that only came out in 3 copies in Guatemala, and just show off, you know, a bit like the David Attenborough of music hunting. But I'm like the worst mixer on earth. That's not really what I'm about. I'm more somebody who hunters and gathers music from all over the place. And I'm a really good editor, you know, say so myself. So sometimes I will edit together totally different songs and music. But overall, I think it's more like you should expect some sort of a journey through my record collection.
Looking forward to that. Before we open up for questions, I can't go on without commenting on your extraordinary James Murray headdress. It's so gorgeous.
Thank you.
now we're going to open up to questions and thoughts. Any more questions? Andrew?
Hello.
Hello.
I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the filming of Mouth Mantra. It's quite extraordinary how it was filmed partly inside your mouth using tiny cameras. So what was that like to dream up and film?
Yeah, the idea to do it in the mouth was actually Jesse's. We kind of started off filming in my mouth, and you know, it's kind of definitely a very Jesse kind of sense of humor kind of thing. And then we actually started collaborating with this high-tech company in Japan. And so I got sent to a dentist office and put this goo in my mouth, and they made a model, and which they then 3D printed in Japan in a bigger way. And then they made, especially for this video, this brand new tiny 3D camera that got put inside the model and kind of walls around that other mouth. So I'm not going to take full credit for having hosted the camera in terms of, but I did some of it, you know. But it is my mouth there. As you can tell from the shapes of the teeth.
Hi, my name is Regina.
Hello.
The NDC. I get this real sense of like getting more inside of the music rather than the music getting inside of us, and then through getting through into the music, getting into nature through your work. Can you describe your connection with nature and what you kind of envisage?
Yeah, I think as I get older, I kind of understand better and better, like, that maybe my experience of nature is kind of Icelandic, or maybe it is actually quite rural, you know, kind of, all the rural people there. like, which apparently is half of the planet, so, you know, that's not too bad. But it's kind of more that when I'm in a rural situation, I feel normal, and when I'm in a city, I feel like I'm holding my breath. And like I'm in an airport, so like I'm just waiting to get out of there. But it's a very typical rural kind of person reaction. But overall, you know, I walk to school every day, which was 40-minute walk and all weathers, and I would sing on the way. And I think my idea of nature is just a sense of well-being. You know, it's not, I'm not like a fanatic that wanna hunt on my foot and, you know, get off the grid and like be self-sufficient, even though that would be fun. But I think it's more for me about just the harmony you feel, especially after a 40-minute walk, like the sky and then the ground and the plants, and everything just merges, and you just kind of lose sense of identity. And I like that feeling, you know, and just the weather and wind in your face. And I think it just makes me happy, you know. And I think overall, it probably, you know, you see kids do that, and they are maybe annoyed or grumpy or whatever, and then they just go outside for half an hour and then they're fine, you know. And I think we would probably not have to use so much when you're psychiatrists. You'd kind of too much mental labor if people would just kind of hang out outside much more. But that's, you know, that's kind of how I see it.
Hello, I'm Annette. Hello. Were you approached at all to perform as part of the Vivid Festival on stage singing? And what do you think of using cities as a canvas, as Vivid does?
Yeah, I'm very impressed with this festival. We actually have a festival in Iceland which is totally different, but only music, which is called the Iceland Airwaves. And what I like about that is that it uses the whole city, and you can walk around, and it takes a long time. You know, it's not, you have to kind of do a billion things in 48 hours and always feel guilty and missing something. So I like that feeling, you know, that you walk around and then you bump into people and you make new friends. I think it's a really organic way or a natural way to do it, you know. I can't remember if they asked me. I think it was more like the person that I work with, Delhi, who has organized my concert since I was a teenager, that we were asking him if he could find a place on earth that would be up for this risk, that I wanted to do, show all the VR videos and then DJ. And a lot of people were just like, ooh, like that could be. But David was right into it. So that's kind of why I ended up here, for their foolhardiness and courage.
Hi, Bjorn, nice to meet you.
Hello.
Could you tell us a little bit about the world premiere work, Not Yet, please?
It is like what I was describing earlier, that it's been a work in progress for a while, and we have bumped into a lot of technical riddles we have to solve. The version you will see here is not the final version, and I think we've accepted that we are going to improve it in the next city, and then for the city after that, it's going to be even better. And we thought, let's just be brave and show it halfway through and just kind of show the faults and just have it this kind of open, organic growth of this VR album, you know, just have it all out in the open. It's basically, in my head, to describe the song, it's this song number 6 on the album. It's the last song of what I call the Heartbreak Saga. So it had to have some sort of conclusion and confrontational manner. It's a finger song, what I call. There's a lot of usually R&B numbers, but I managed to squeeze one that genre into my album. So it we were kind of trying to capture that a little bit in the video, that because a lot of the songs are quite vulnerable and broken, and it's like a journey, and this is the journey where, you know, the sort of I will survive moment. I will survive. Yeah. So, that was the mood board.
Thank you very much. I think I have time for two more questions.
I wanted to ask you, so much of this exhibition is about technology, and you've been working with some amazing new technology, and as you said, met some technical riddles along the way. Where do you think the future of this kind of art versus technology is going, and is it exciting?
Yeah, I mean, I find it very exciting. Obviously, technology is just a tool, you know, in the same way fire was just, you know, something that or the knife, maybe a better for the primitive people. You know, they had to sort of decide if they would kill with it or hunt with it. You know, like, well, this is the same thing. Okay, I've got myself in a middle here, stuck in a corner. But it is a good example though, because it has this duality. You know, it's like we always have to choose what we do with nuclear energy, you know, are we gonna, and so on. It's all, the morality doesn't come wrapped up into the new inventions, or the soul, you know, the humanity. We have to put it there, you know. I'm definitely part of me, I'm very conservative, and I like Icelandic old melodies, and I'm very connected with the land, and there's a part of me that's like quite pro-nature, but there's also part of me that's like, I'm a bit of a magpie, I like glowy shiny objects. But I also think new technologies are an opportunity to update us with what's happening right in the world. Like it or not, people like armies, the military, the governments, the Google, the Big Brother, whatever, everybody's gonna embrace it. You know, so for artists to stick their hand in the ground and say, I'm not going to, you know, I think that just means that there will be no things with that craft that will have humanity and will have soul. So I think it's important for us to embrace it, so we are on the same plane as the politicians and as the military folks and business money people, you know. So I think we have to and believe that the expression, human expression, like the song or the voice or to capture in music emotion, that it's so strong that it doesn't matter. It's so strong that you could put in a dictaphone, or you could make a one drawing with one pencil, or you could use 57 new VR gadgets, and it's just a tool, you know. But I also think it brings out, as an artist, I think a musician brings out an interesting side in people when while something is still being discovered, because it's kind of like you're entering the unknown, and you can't fall like into old habits or old traps and just do things like how you've always done them. It shakes you up, and you have to kind of like just, you know, go blindfolded into the unknown and discover not what you were 10 years ago, but what you are now. And so I think it's very, very helpful. And I also think, especially as a pop musician, and I'm quite proud of being making modern folk music, I think it's a certain duty to be using the same tools that we are using every day, you know, texting your lovers or family and Skyping or going on Facebook or, you know, this kind of everyday life that should be the same tools that you are writing your songs with, you know. It's easy, I think it's easy to kind of go back to, you know, the acoustic wooden things and kind of just close your eyes and think, decide the world is evil and I'm not going to take part in it, and I'm just going to go back in my cave and write a little acoustic number. But so I think this conversation is should be ongoing, you know. Yeah, I think that sort of wraps it up.
That was a very poetic answer, thank you. Please join me in thanking the very wonderful Fiona.
Yeah, as well.
Okay.